previously on Schooled.
You know, if I step outside of myself and listen to myself, I will be like, holy shit, like, you shouldn't be here.
I wasn't strong at the time, you know, so that's what happened. And the only thing I kept saying was, well, they're with family. You know, they're doing good, and all along, they wasn't.
No one thought that I could do it. And to hear your name called first place when so many people doubt you, and you don't really have anyone. And it was always just a hole, because I never had that.
In his first public act as principal of Wister Elementary, Javon Weaver did something a little unconventional. The school is in Philadelphia's East Germantown neighborhood, known for pockets of deep poverty and struggles with violence. And the first-year leader wanted to set a tone early that parents should think of the school as a home base for the community. So, he threw a big party. On a hot August day in 2016, Wister Schoolyard was hopping with parents, students, and teachers. Music blared from DJ speakers. Big barrel grills cooked racks of meat over burning charcoal, and Javon took it all in, looking out over the nearly all-black student body, feeling like he was seeing younger versions of himself.
I see myself in every black boy that I see. I see myself in every black girl that I see.
Javon's own two young kids, Jace and Ariel, were there too. And his goal with this party, and the year in general, was to make Wister everything he'd want his own kids' school to be, and get it to the point that he'd send them there as well.
I'm a parent. You know, I walked into my, you know, Jace's school and Ariel's school all the time, and they're fully transparent. It was a bunch of communication. That's the same thing that I want my families to experience, you know?
Coming into this new school year, the expectations were immense. The idea was for a brand new team of teachers and leaders to make a dramatic difference in the lives of the kids in this neighborhood, to increase their learning abilities in ways that would forever alter the course of their lives. William Jackson, parent of an incoming kindergartner, had bought into that promise, and so far was encouraged.
What I see the community. And for this area, for this community, just having these kids out here like this, just around and having fun, was dangerous. And for you to be able to come back here and have the families and have such a great day, this is a statement.
But getting to this point was no small matter. In fact, the entire process that led to this moment was part of one of the most contentious and controversial school policy debates that Philadelphia has ever seen, one that came to epitomize the confusion, the politics, and the fury that have long underlined the school choice debate, not just in Philadelphia, but across the country.
Y'all screaming, give back the resources. There is no resources. We have the solution now. My child deserves better. My child is in a failing school. The school been failing. This ain't the start. This ain't nothing new. And for y'all, y'all don't even live in my community.
This is Schooled, a podcast produced by Keystone Crossroads and WHYY. It gives you the insider story on public schools and the lives that hang in the balance. I'm Kevin McCrory, and in this season, we're focusing on Philadelphia's Wister Elementary, the students, the parents, the faculty, and the huge fight that sprung from this tiny school. This is Episode 2. So why did this debate about Wister surge to the forefront? To answer that, we have to leave Javon for a bit and rewind about 10 months back from that community barbecue to a press conference in October 2015.
Hey. All right, let's get to it. So we all digress.
Turning this on.
I know. I'm excited today.
William Height is the superintendent of the School District of Philadelphia. This was at a press conference in October of that year. As part of a big initiative to spur change in the city, Height called for three city elementary schools to be given to charter operators.
The schools have been chronically underperforming for many years.
Each had very low scores on standardized tests, and more parents from those neighborhoods were sending their kids elsewhere. One of the schools was John Wister Elementary.
So there's a level of urgency around making sure that these families have access to quality programs.
What Height was essentially saying here was this: we've been doing such a poor job at this school that we think somebody else can do it better. It'll still be a public school, but we as the traditional district want to hand the keys to somebody else. In the long history of public education, this is a relatively new idea. But it gets to the heart of what's at stake as public schools have evolved over the past few decades. Typically, when a proposal like this is made, there's an immediate shock factor, especially for the existing school faculty, who are being called on the carpet in a very public and shaming way.
Right now, I'm very much overwhelmed, and I'm angry.
That's Donna Smith, Wister's then principal.
Because we've done a lot of work here, and I think the information that comes out on the news stations doesn't paint the entire picture.
Smith, who'd been there more than a decade, found out about the proposal the same morning that the media did. And I met her at the school a few days after the announcement.
I was walking out of the office this morning, and one of my little preschoolers came running up. Hey! And he just jumped into my arms. You know what I mean? That brings you back for a moment, but that empty, kicked in the gut feeling, then it comes back again. Like the whole reality, no matter how much you try to just bury yourself in the kids or bury yourself in the work, that reality comes back again.
Wister staff learned that day that the district was moving two teachers out of the building due to dwindling enrollment. And to a faculty already feeling under-resourced, there was a bitter irony in losing teachers at the same time as being told they weren't doing a good enough job. Staffing cuts were nothing new to teacher Melissa Rasper. She'd been at the school 11 years at that point and saw resource levels rise and then sharply fall through years of a district budget crunch.
We make it happen here regardless of the cuts. So that's why I feel like to go back to saying that we're failing kids is just a horrible statement to make.
Liz Healy taught an anti-bullying course at Wister.
I bought socks this weekend because I have children coming to go school with no socks. I buy that. They don't give that to me. I buy my own copy paper. I have no math books, no reading books, no workbooks. Everything has to be copied. And that copy paper comes out of my pocket, not theirs. And yet they hold us to the standard, you know, of the suburban schools. I have friends in the suburban schools who are getting iPads. I don't have a math book.
The news of a big school change can also take parents by surprise. Imagine suddenly being told your kid is in a failing school. You may have known it had problems, but not failing. The school system apparently did know, though, and now their answer is to turn the job over to some other unknown entity. And that unknown can be scary. Shortly after Height's announcement, the district held a parent meeting in the neighborhood to talk things through. It was a volatile scene.
Y'all not sitting there trying to help us? Y'all want to do what y'all want to do.
There were false rumors.
Why are y'all taking pre-K and kindergarten after school when y'all say no child is left behind?
There was fondness expressed for the existing faculty and general cynicism that the district's central office had children's best interests at heart.
My child is not suffering. My oldest nor my second son. They're not. They're straight A students. They're good kids. They know that these people love them. We don't know. You guys giving us this information, this flip. So now we don't trust you. So how is our children supposed to trust you?
But there was also criticism of how the school was being run, like from grandparent Ed Lloyd.
Teachers being absent most of the year. My one granddaughter had multiple teachers all year long, substitutes all year long, all year long.
Uniting both sides was a disgust at the way the process was being handled. The last time Superintendent Height had made a similar proposal, parents at other schools were given a chance to vote. They could either have the school stay under district control or become a charter. In those cases, parents overwhelmingly voted against the conversion. But this time, no vote. Evelyn Sample Oates from the central office informed the crowd of that fact.
Those parents had the option to vote.
The rationale behind that procedural change gets at one of the big reasons why these proposals can blow up into massive fights. When a charter school takes over, it's a threat to the teachers' union. Most charters don't have unions, and teachers work on year-to-year contracts. So the more charters there are, the more erosion of the job protections and benefits that collective bargaining has given public educators. And that's something union members, past and present, devote a lot of time and energy fighting against. People like Carol Kalimnik, who came to that Wister parents meeting too.
You can hear these salespeople up here. They're all pushing corporate education reform on you in the form of Renaissance charter schools. But you have a voice. There's a lot of anger. There's a lot of frustration. There's a lot of really street smarts. You got to use what you have to fight for what's important for you and your kids.
And so when Height stripped away the vote, the implication was that the parents had only shot down his proposal the last time because the union had organized and turned parents against their own best interests. But to parents, it's hard not to read that switch as, we don't think you can decide what's best for your kids.
So when was our time to vote?
When these proposals get made, battle lines are drawn around familiar quarters. The union and its supporters in politics and academia line up on one side, and school choice advocates and their philanthropic and political backers line up on the other. Both organize in what becomes like a political campaign to win the hearts and minds of parents, who are often caught in the middle. If you're a parent against the change, you're labeled a puppet of the union. If you're a parent for it, you're being manipulated by the deep pockets of the school reformers. With Wister, this debate could largely be boiled down to two women with deep ideological differences. Both started as community advocates, but then rose to positions of power and influence.
A lot of people don't know me. They have a perspective of me. They have what somebody else has told them about me. But they don't know Sylvia P. Sims.
Sylvia Sims is a grandparent from a poor Philadelphia neighborhood. For years, she worked for the school district as a bus attendant, and then became a parent organizer and an advocate for school choice. She was appointed to the city's five-member school reform commission, essentially the school board, in 2013. And the way she saw it, she was there to represent low-income parents.
These are my families. These are my children, because I'm there with them. I live like they live for the most part, you know. I am they. Just in the struggle. and the struggle is real.
She was all in for the change at Wister from the get-go. She says the needs of students in Philadelphia are so great and require such urgency that all the old rules need to be thrown out the window, with little sympathy for how that affects anyone but poor children.
We have a lot of failing schools, and I really think that we're not moving fast enough to try to change.
On the other side,
there is no way that we can disinvest in public ed and then look at declining outcomes and blame the schools and those communities for it and use that as an excuse to privatize them.
Helen Gim was a teacher turned journalist who became a persistent, nationally recognized advocate for schools. She was elected to Philadelphia City Council with lots of support from the teachers union in 2015. To her, charter school conversions and supporters like Sims embody a misguided abdication of the school board's responsibility.
People who are completely stumped when faced with one of the most basic questions, how do you improve a public school? They had no answers to give us. They only said, I'll hire somebody else to do my job. That's it. That's what they were giving us a choice over.
The friction between these two ideologies makes a powder keg, one that explodes at jam-packed, marathon-length school board meetings.
Public education was founded on principles of common good and not corporate greed. But our public school system is being systematically destroyed by the very officials entrusted with its care.
Diane Payne is another retired Philly teacher and union supporter. This was the meeting 2 weeks after the proposal was announced.
Schools are not failing. Society, government, politicians, and school district officials are failing. How dare you label schools as failing when you starve them of resources?
Later that night, Superintendent Height singled out Payne in his closing remarks.
I also think it's really important to ask the questions of why at the schools that are serving minority children, we haven't been able to determine or figure out how to teach them to read or do math. And I do think that as we continue to work, we always have to ask that question, because it can't be what's right for some simply because they're in certain neighborhoods. It has to be what's right for all. And these children were not performing even when we had the resources many of you, especially you, Ms. Payne, were describing that we had in schools.
Height's point gets into one of the most difficult things to confront in public education. Across the country, we're not very good at educating students in deep poverty, especially children of color. And when we talk about, quote, good schools, we're usually talking about ones that have in some way reduced their number of really needy kids. This happens in a number of ways, by drawing district boundary lines around communities of wealth, through things like special admission magnet schools, and it can happen in typical charter schools, ones where parents need to have the wherewithal to enter a lottery, and then the school has a lot more leeway to push out the students who misbehave or don't do well. But this isn't the arrangement that was proposed at Worcester. There, the idea was same school building, same neighborhood boundaries, different people running the school. And that's a really tough ask. So tough, it sometimes fails miserably.
Even with all of the resources here, nothing is being accomplished. Nothing.
Sharita Cromwell is a parent who learned that lesson the hard way. Her kid's school went through that sort of conversion a few years before the debate about Worcester. Things went well at first, but then a charter company called Scholar Academies abandoned the school without warning when the job got too hard and too expensive.
They didn't look at our children as people. They looked at our children as dollars and cents, and it didn't make any sense to them to invest any more money in our kids.
Philadelphia has done these charter conversions more than 20 times in the past decade or so, and the results are pretty mixed. Sometimes it seems the new regime is better, sometimes better but only compared to a low baseline, sometimes it seems no different, or worse. This type of true neighborhood-based work is so tough that most charter organizations don't even want to try. When the district invited proposals to run Worcester, it got only one reply, and that was from Mastery Charter Schools, where Scott Gordon is CEO.
Mastery is a kids' agenda. I believe every child can succeed. This is really about growing our youth and building our city.
Mastery is the biggest charter network in Philadelphia, and for a while looked to be head and shoulders above the rest when it came to taking on this job. But a new, more difficult state test brought Mastery's results more in line with the city's other struggling schools. And so with Worcester, the big question was, would a change in school leadership really make a difference? Before we go any further, we probably should talk about money. So far in this story, we've heard a few references linking the idea of charter school conversion to something seemingly financially crooked.
You can hear these salespeople up here. They're all pushing corporate education reform on you.
Public education was founded on principles of common good and not corporate greed.
These were both retired Philly school district teachers. So what did they mean? Well, when you're talking about control of public education, you're talking about control of big sums of money. Money that goes for salaries, benefits, contracts. And some people, especially union supporters, are very skeptical of giving that control to any entity outside of the traditional system, questioning their true motivations. With charter schools, since there's so many individual entities, it can be harder to have robust oversight, and there's been plenty of examples of misuse.
The founder of the Pennsylvania Cyber Charter School, indicted by a federal grand jury.
But there are also plenty of examples of impropriety within traditional districts.
Districts are under fire for how they are spending taxpayer dollars, and it's costing you millions.
And so charter supporters say better oversight is needed in general, and the answer isn't to give a monopoly of control to just one sector. And then there's this. Anytime a district creates a new charter school, there are inefficiencies that end up negatively affecting the kids who remain in the traditional system. So every new charter seat can be seen as a threat to the viability of district schools, and ultimately lead to school closures. Again, Helen Gim.
Dollars that go to charters come out of public school students' experiences. That's not sustainable. Period. No matter what the outcome is going to be.
But to charter supporters, this all sounds too much like fighting to defend a system, not students. Again, Sylvia Sims.
I see a lot of people fighting and standing up for the status quo. You know, we're really doing a disservice to a lot of these children in Philadelphia. But I don't see nobody coming out fighting or screaming or being angry about that.
So far, the story of the Worcester conversion has unfolded in a very similar fashion to ones like it in the past. But in early January of 2016, things took an unexpected turn.
Kevin, I'm here.
Okay, great. I'm going to record.
Sure.
That, again, is Superintendent William Height. Speaking by phone, he told me that more up-to-date test data showed signs of growth at Worcester, and so he decided it wouldn't be fair to go through with the switch.
because we only have finite resources. We felt that there are schools that are lower performing than Worcester that would need this level of investment.
But by that point, a vocal, organized collection of parents in East Germantown had become attached to the idea of mastery. That included grandparent Anna Figueroa, who at first was very much against the charter proposal.
Well, I was like, no, like, we need to keep it a district school. You know, we need to come up together and make a difference and make the school district accountable.
Figueroa really liked some of Worcester's teachers, and those hoping to keep the school under district control were hoping to count on her as an ally, but she wasn't ready to commit.
So they were saying, well, Ms. Figueroa, can you talk at the SRC? And I was like, I'm going to hold off for a minute. I need to know more.
Figueroa decided to tour one of Mastery's other schools, Cleveland Elementary, which Figueroa had actually attended long before the charter existed.
And when I went to Cleveland, it was like, wow, that's my alma mater. You know, I graduated from Cleveland, two teachers in the classroom. The school looked it bright. But I also, in the back of my mind, oh, yeah, we taking a tour. They're just like the district. They make everything beautiful, you know. But then I sat down, and they had, like, videos of Oprah Winfrey donating to them.
$1 million for you. $1 million for Mastery. $1 million for Sci Academy.
Obama was doing this.
We can see it in Mastery Charter School in Philadelphia.
And then the kids themselves came in and spoke to us. And I was like, wow, this can be Worcester, you know, and that's what made me change my mind.
Other parents had similar experiences on tours. And at the school board meeting that happened 10 days after Height and I had that phone call, they came out in force. Alicia Grant, parent of a second grader, questioned why Height would rescind his recommendation without having a better alternative in mind.
Mastery have their plan on the table. The school board do not. They do not. I personally ask, can you match anything that Mastery is offering right now in writing that I have? They cannot.
After months of being told how bad Worcester was, parents like Saeed Parker felt betrayed by Height's flip-flop.
Right now, what credit can I give y'all? Nothing.
Getting parents excited about Mastery and then angry with Height's decision was no accident. It was part of an effective community organizing campaign put together by Mastery that drummed up grassroots support. But money played a role too. From public filings, we know they spent about $55,000 to lobby parents to be for the change. An organizer was paid to advocate, others were hired to canvass the neighborhood, T-shirts were made, transportation to take parents to tours and to school board meetings was arranged, and pro-Mastery videos, like this one, were produced by a downtown firm and promoted on social media.
I'm very excited for Worcester to turn around.
I'm excited for Mastery to turn Worcester around. My son deserves a good education. He deserves to want to go to school.
To Mastery, this was about spreading the word of its mission and its work. The teachers' union was trying to do the same. But to Mastery's detractors, the action smacked of buying influence. The exact details of the lobbying effort didn't come to light until months later, after the City Ethics Board fined Mastery for not disclosing the activity. Again, Helen Gim.
Undisclosed lobbying is desperately unfair to the public process, and it took a formal complaint with the City Ethics Board to unpack the lobbying that was going on at the time. But it had a role to play, and we can't be naive about those kinds of things.
Mastery calls the disclosure violation a technical oversight and defends the need to get to know a community and educate parents about their options. Again, CEO Scott Gordon.
Yes, there's expenses involved. We're not permitted to be in the school every day, so we go to the neighborhood and introduce ourselves and ask them what does the community need and listen to parents. What's the most important thing? It's a whole engagement process.
Whichever way you look at it, the point is this. It worked.
I have tried for years to get my children out of Worcester and have been unsuccessful.
At that January 2016 school board meeting, parents like Dion Garrison Hubert came to testify extremely invested emotionally.
The only ray of hope that I had was when Mastery came around. They didn't approach me. I approached them because They are the only option that I see for my children to have a fighting chance.
This all happened at the meeting where the five-member school board had been set to vote on whether to advance the Wister proposal. But since Height rescinded it, there was no formal resolution on the table. During an especially contentious moment in the meeting, advocates for and against the change got into a shouting match. It started with a turn Wister around chant from Mastery supporters. And then a response from a woman against the change yelling, give them back their resources and don't sell our babies. Wister parent David Childs was set to speak next. He was for the change and started by saying he had a first grader at the school.
Not only am I a parent, I'm a concerned father. Y'all screaming, give back the resources? There is no resources. We've been fighting with these people for the longest. So, my whole fight is, I'll wait till you finish. Don't count this against my time. So, back to the facts, there is no resources. Mastery has the answer now. We have the solution now. My child deserves better. My child is in a failing school. The school been failing. This ain't the start. This ain't nothing new. And for y'all, y'all don't even live in my community. Y'all don't know what goes down with my kids. I see what goes on. Y'all don't be in our meetings. So don't talk about something that y'all don't know.
As this tension boiled, a little later in the night, in a surprise move, one of the school board members did something that caught most of the room off guard. That person, North Philly grandparent Sylvia Sims.
I have a motion on the floor. I want to be clear that I am fully supportive of Dr. Height leadership.
Sims and another board member had been visited by pro-Mastery parents in the days leading up to the meeting, and she says she was moved by their pleas.
On behalf of the families who visit me in tears, and I'm going to say it again, in tears, I must act today.
With this, Sims revived the idea of conversion, and to the parents who came to support Mastery that night, it was a vindication.
I move to approve the resolution I have presented.
But others felt betrayed. Parent Kenya Nation Holmes had gone on those same school tours, really liked what she saw, but teachers at Wister helped convince her to oppose Mastery. She feared that the lack of teacher tenure would force the faculty to be too worried about standardized tests.
So now I have to teach the children to take tests and to pass with A's, or else I no longer have a job. You can't teach like that. Where's the passion? Where's the love?
Other critics say the whole thing was too wrapped up in backdoor influence. The city's big philanthropic school choice backers had also lobbied school board members on the issue behind the scenes. And there were conflict of interest accusations leveled against Sims. This came up in the room that night. Pamela Williams is a West Philadelphia pastor. And as Sims was casting the deciding vote, she stood up in the back of the room and began screaming. She objects to the fact that Sims' sister spoke to Wister parents like Anna Figueroa while being employed by a pro-school choice consultancy group.
One sister had the contract, the other sister sitting on the board and gets the decisive vote? That's wrong. That's just wrong.
Sims' sister, Quibilla Devine, says her consultancy job had nothing to do with Mastery or Wister, and that she didn't stand to profit from the conversion.
No contract, no money, and it was nothing. So I was doing Anna a favor.
Later, both Sims and her sister were cleared of any ethical violations by the district and the state ethics board. Still, Philadelphia's mayor blasted the board's move that night, as did the city council president. Councilwoman Helen Gimm was in the room when it happened.
I find walk-on resolutions, which are not vetted, did not allow public testimony, did not allow for any public discussion to be completely untoward in governance.
Sims says she only acted in the interest of parents.
They came to me seeking help. So I had to I had to be their voice. And that's why I did what I did. Because I am fighting for the families that can't fight for themselves. I am the voice for the voiceless.
Following that surprise vote, Wister dominated news headlines and editorials, and in East Germantown, neighbors were turned against neighbors. Wister parent Dion Garrison Hubert who we heard testify for the change, was criticized by a popular morning host on Philly's black community radio station.
Solomon Jones called me a sellout. He said, oh, so you sell your kids out? And I said, absolutely. I sold out for a better product.
Other pro-Mastery supporters say their kids were picked on by the district school staff. Again, Anna Figueroa, here talking about when the superintendent rescinded his proposal.
My grandkids came home and said, Mama, Miss Smith and the teacher said they beat you up. They won. You're a loser. Like, I'm like, what? Why is you picking at my grandkids? They kids.
Kenya Nation Holmes, who was against the change, felt bullied by Mastery supporters.
I went to the last SRC meeting I went to. I was being taunted by them in the back. They were calling me names. They were saying things under their breath as I'm trying to read my speech. Towards the end, it was very childish.
Feeling all this pressure, the whole process just became too much for Worcester grandparent Gail Tarver.
The tactics used against the families of the Worcester Elementary School have been damaging and divisive. And I think that the SRC and the way you conduct your turnaround business, you guys need to dig yourself because you're hurting these kids.
The final decision to approve or deny the change didn't occur until late April of that year. In the weeks preceding, opponents made one last push to stop it, with the rhetoric against Mastery reaching a fever point.
Next up, we have Minister Rodney Muhammad, who is the president of the Philadelphia chapter of the NAACP, here to speak for us, Minister Muhammad.
At a big rally outside district headquarters, the local NAACP spoke of the school board and Mastery in reference to the slave trade.
They are nothing but a consultant group for private industry who wants to take over our children and put them back on the auction block. Are you with us to shut this down?
During public testimony later, Worcester phys ed teacher Robin Lowry predicted tragic outcomes for students if the transition went through.
I predict that wherever charterizations occur, Chicago, Philly, and L.A., we will see increased gang association and youth disenfranchisement because most of our vulnerable students will have been kept in schools with limited choices in a cold, controlling environment.
And so the question is, was this all the bluster of union supporters afraid of change? Wisdom based on the spotty record of past conversions? Some combination of the two? Kirby Ames, a high school senior at another Mastery school, saw it as the former.
I'm a student graduating this year, so Mastery gave me a lot, and I'm thankful for it. So I don't believe any of the stuff they're talking about up there.
On the night of the final vote, the board agreed with Ames in a 3-1 decision.
Mr. Davis, please call the roll.
Mr. Green?
Yes.
Ms. Houston?
Yes.
Ms. Jimenez is abstaining on this vote. Ms. Sims?
Yes.
And Chair Neff?
No. Our next set of resolutions is for...
The voices of the skeptics were drowned out, and only time would prove them right or wrong.
Our next set of resolutions... Folks, can we continue our meeting? Thank you.
At that point, for it or against it, the decision was made. Mastery was awarded a multi-million-dollar contract to run the school, and the existing faculty at Worcester would lose their jobs. And for Mastery staff, it was time to get to work. Time to prove that the whole idea was worth it. To prove that all the drama, all the tension, all the time and energy and emotional investment from parents would not be for naught. And the person they had in mind to take this responsibility on, to lead it, Javon Weaver.
I remember sitting down while watching the decision that night. I was cheering right along with parents, like, yes, yes, yes. I was just as excited as they were.
But personally, things were about to get a whole lot harder for Javon. As an assistant principal, being a workaholic had put a strain on his relationship with his wife. And a week after he formally accepted the job at Worcester, which would mean even longer, more intense hours, they split up.
I put everything else first. I put my kids first. I put... working and all this, but I'm thinking that everything I'm doing is kind of like showing you that I'm putting our family in first. I'm working hard so we can buy a new house and we can have a great life. But her, like I could have took care of her more. So I was not a good husband. I wasn't. And I could say that now, but, and I'm sorry, I apologize to her.
And so as Mastery took over Worcester, and Jovan planned what the change would mean for the students and the parents of East Germantown, he did it with a heavy heart. But he did it with more determination than ever.
And I chose a life that would impact other lives. And maybe this is part of the cause for that.
On the next episode of Schooled, we go inside Mastery Worcester for more than a year to see if Jovan can live up to the promise.
You just feel a heavy burden to succeed. You feel just a lot of pressure.
We hear from teachers.
I became a teacher because three of my little cousins' fathers were murdered. It was at that time when they didn't have a father, they needed someone like me, and I realized that there's probably way more kids like that out here.
And students.
I don't want to die too early before I even do what I have to do in this world.
What do you have to do in this world?
Pursue my dreams.
All this as Jovan feels the strain between having high expectations and facing on-the-ground realities.
We talk about no excuses, but you have a child who doesn't know where they're going to sleep at night. They don't know. What do you mean there's no excuses? You gotta be kidding me.